tremendous problem for higher education and therefore an outstanding opportunity for us, for what we do. If you look at the 60s and 70s, you'll see that the court of public opinion has been inexorably moving from institution to institution. It began with business, and then it went to government and the church and all the professions, and now most recently it has gobbled up even the utilities, the untouchable utilities, but it never quite got to higher education for two reasons. One, we had a seller's market, and two, governments were throwing money at us. I don't have to tell you that neither of those conditions any longer pertain, and I think during the 80s, the Court of Public Opinion is going to demand a thorough investigation of what they consider to be those arrogant, rich, egghead institutions. And if you think I'm talking foolishly, go out on the street corners of the nearest city or town to you and just talk to some of the folks. I think you'll find what I find, that people wonder whether we're relevant. You know the whole bit. I don't have to go through it. All right, that's a problem. But I see it as an opportunity, because there's only one professional group that I know that can deal with that problem, and you're sitting right here in this room. College presidents cannot do it. Father Curry has already told you of his dependence on a professional, on a specialist. Certainly you've heard it from many others. And certainly if you look at other institutions, business, government, hospitals, in all of those cases, the public relations professional is right at the door of the chief executive officer. I can give you a list of 1,000 such institutions where the day begins with the chief executive officer meeting with the public relations professional, and it ends in the same way. Because chief executives today spend about 75% or more of their time on tasks that we would call public relations. Now that's a tremendous opportunity for us, but, are we ready? Have we got the skills to take advantage of this room at the top? Let me ask you this question, and then you can answer it yourself. Do you think of yourselves as a professional practicing the way other professions practice? And let me describe to you how I see other professions practicing. If you were a lawyer and I came to you with a case, the first thing you would do would be to turn around to your bookshelf and take down the statutory law. You would say, what did Congress or the legislature intend? And then you would take off your shelf the case law, and you would say, what have the courts decided about this? And then, having gone by the book, you would start thinking about my case. Now, is that what you do when a problem or an opportunity comes across your desk? Do you retreat to the literature, to the body of knowledge? Or do you kind of lean back, you know, and put one hand on each six-shooter and come up with a creative decision? I'm afraid many of us are still living on the frontier. And I suggest to you that that is not how professionals function. Go to your doctor. What does the doctor do? The first thing the doctor does is to gather all the symptoms that he or she can elicit from you. And then, well, I was going to say they go by the book. They don't actually. They go by the computer terminal. They go over and they punch in your symptoms to the nearest medical center, and up on their VDT comes all that is known about those symptoms. But before the doctor suggests some kind of a treatment, the doctor has checked with the literature, has found out the latest that is known. I wonder if we go by the book. I'm not sure we do, and I'm not sure many of us even have confidence that there is a body of knowledge. And I'm here to, first of all, assure you that there is a tremendous body of knowledge. And it begins with even simple things, like the three basic rules for communications. Certainly you all know those. You know the five languages that all communications appear in and that we have to know by heart. And certainly you know the four tones that any communications can take. And you understand, don't you? How about diffusion process? Do you know diffusion process? Do you know how the mind processes and accepts a new idea? And then what people do to make a decision on that new idea? Do you know the six methods, the only six methods that the psychologists and sociologists between them have been able to identify and prove by research over 40 years, which will enable people to change or reinforce an attitude? There are only six ways that they have been able to find. Do you know those six? So that when you're faced with changing or reinforcing an attitude or an opinion, you can immediately plot it and say, ah, I think this would work, or this would work. That's what the doctor does, you know. He says, well, I think penicillin, or I think terramycin. Well, we have our penicillins and terramycins too. But I believe we have to know that body of knowledge so thoroughly that we don't give six-shooter answers. Instead, we can respond with techniques, with theories. Now, theories, of course, are always unpopular because they're theories. But that's where you people have one of the most fantastic advantages of anybody practicing, because you work in institutions that live on theories. Let's face it. That's what goes on in universities, is that the world's body of knowledge is pulled together by scholars, put into a theoretical construct so that it can then be replicated to person after person after person in exactly the same language, in exactly the same way. I have found in the last 10 years of my practice that having public relations in a theoretical framework is the greatest tool that I have at my command, because I can tell my clients why I am suggesting something. Now, if you think of what other professionals do, that's what they do. A lawyer, for example, presents a brief. Now, is a brief full of hard data, like something that comes from an accountant? Of course not. It's all guesswork, just like many of the things that we're forced to do. We have to make postulations. But because lawyers present them in these beautiful briefs that seem so nicely reasoned, that soft, qualitative, human data comes across as very hard decision-making. So I urge you to consider the body of knowledge in public relations, to find a way to learn it. Maybe next year's case conference will present it to you piece by piece so that you then have it in a theoretical context which you can explain back home. I can only tell you from personal experience that it works beautifully. However, I don't want to leave you with just theory. So let me try and make 2 points before I sit down. First of all, public relations, if it is to really understand itself and communicate itself, has to have some agreement of what is our unique selling proposition. What is it that we do in this field that nobody else really quite does? I want to offer you a definition which I think may be a suggestion along those lines. I find that public relations is the attempt, and I emphasize that word attempt, it is not a sure thing. When you venture forth into the court of public opinion, you may lose. The public may tell you, look, we understand what you're trying to do, but we don't quite give you our consent. You had better change your policies. That's the way the democratic system operates. So it is an attempt, but it's an attempt to do something. It's an attempt to solve problems or create opportunities. And it is an attempt to do these things in a very marvelous way, because we do this through our knowledge and understanding of human nature. And those are the two basic words, human nature. If you look at what we do and what all the other professions do, we are the only ones that are committed to human nature, to people participating in their own lives, to trying to communicate and make relationships with people as they are, not as some beautiful idealistic concept of humanity as we wish it were. I think that that gives us a tool no one else has. Aren't you the ones, really, stop to think if you're doubtful of that. Aren't you the ones in your outfit that when the planners come in with this marvelous document and all those computer printouts and tells you that this is the 5-year plan, aren't you probably the one that says, hey, gang, this is swell. The only thing is, people have to operate this system and it ain't gonna work. Those 2-minute coffee breaks are gonna be 20-minute coffee breaks. And all these marvelous goals just may not go that way because people are more individualistic. If you aren't the one doing that, that may suggest that no one is doing it, and maybe that tells us something about planning in higher education. But I suggest to you that human nature is our bottom line. I had a marvelous example of that the other day at Glassboro State, where I was talking to a group. I went out to wash my hands before lunch, and they had one of those awful machines in there, you know, that dries your hands with the air that comes out, that blows the air out. And on this was an instruction plate. And it said, 1, you know, shake water from hands. 2, push button to turn machine on. And 3, rub hands, you know, slowly under the hot air until dry. Aha. But some public relations practitioner on campus who understood human nature had written in 4, wipe hands on pants. I hope that makes the point, because there are an awful lot of instances in every institution's life where somebody has to know to wipe their hands on their pants, and that's us. And if you think of public relations in that sense, it's far different from passing out news tips to the media. And frankly, anybody can pass out news tips to the media. I hope that doesn't demean what you think you do. But news tips, passer outers, are truck drivers in my book. The guy upstairs calls and says, I got a message to go to Livonia. Is there a truck driver down there who can take it? I don't think you want to be truck drivers, and I know I don't. I want to be at the top. I want to participate in decision making, but that means that I've got to go to those top councils knowing my body of knowledge and able to present it. So here are 10 concrete tips that I have found in actual use with clients that may help you move quickly towards this position at the top, that may help you change perceptions of yourself and change the institution's perceptions of you. Number one, when you do your annual public relations program, and of course you all do annual programs, I hope you don't call it a public relations program. That has no sell. We call ours internal and external communications and feedback systems. Again, you know, that's how we get the fee up. But it does make a point, I hope, that they have to be both internal and external, and communications isn't enough. You've got to build in specific feedback, and it's got to be a system. When you do that and you list all your audiences, there is only one name to put down as your top priority audience, and that is the administration of your own outfit. It is not your alumni. It is not the public. The number one audience for your public relations plan and program is your president, your board of directors, trustees, vice presidents, deans, whoever runs your place. Because if you can't get them behind it and understanding it, the rest of it ain't going to matter. But most of us never put them even on the plan. And I mean put it on the plan. I put it on the plan and I show everybody. And instead of getting a negative response from administrators, usually they say, hey, that's great, you're going to tell me what you're going to do this year. So it isn't all bad. It's something you ought to consider. Second tip, do you put out an annual report? If you don't, do. Do it for two reasons. Obviously, it's something that every educational institution ought to be doing. No wonder the public doesn't know. We don't tell them. We don't tell them in a regularized way. And an annual report has become accepted as a regularized way of telling our constituents what we do. But, if you take the lead in putting out the annual report, it means you're going to have to cement relationships with all aspects of the institution, and you're going to be the one who pulls the threads together. It gives you a chance to get into the kind of a position that Father Curry talked about, of working with everyone and being in charge of probably the most important single document that will go forth from your institution that year. It's public relations at the top. Thirdly, are you involved in the speeches that are given by your administrative officers and by other people around your campus? If you're not writing their speeches, look out, because your public relations program is probably being subverted on every side, and certainly it is not speaking with one clear voice. Somebody has to coordinate that. It ought to be you, and again, this gives you a chance to work with administrators and deans and others when they are most receptive. Because most people, not all certainly, but most people will really accept and want help with speaking engagements. So here's a chance for you to help the institution speak with one clear voice by participating in that. Fourthly, do you know how to speak Chinese? Do you know how to speak, in other words, the way administrators speak? Do you know your particular vice president or president? Do you know what that person reads or watches? Do you know the thought patterns that that person has? It's very easy to find out by reading and watching the same things yourself. It's a simple management trick. People in business and the government have been doing it for years. And believe me, it works. And I'm sorry that Father Curry is listening to this, but the way it goes is like this, that you read some article in The Atlantic because that's this person's favorite magazine, and you stop them in the hall and say, hey, did you see that thing in Atlantic? I thought, boom, boom, boom. And over time comes a perception that here's a person that's looking at the same subjects I am looking at. Now, that's obviously simplistic, but the fact is that if you know what your president or vice president, whomever, is thinking and how their patterns run, I think you will find a peer relationship begin to develop. It has never failed me, and it's something you at least ought to look into. How about training in your institution? Are you involved in training? Well, if you're not, let me give you two good reasons why. I want everyone in this room who feels that their institution writes good, crisp business letters to raise your hand. Okay, now I want everybody who can honestly say that their institution is not wasting zillions of hours a year on that crappy memo syndrome to raise their hand. You all have two-paragraph memos, right? Here's a guy. You ought to talk to this guy afterwards. He knows something we all should know. Those are just two very specific examples. You all know that the time management and other people are telling us that there are better ways to do this. We know that there are better ways to communicate than most of the business letters that are written. Well, somebody can train other people on campus to do that. I suggest you get into training not only to solve those problems, but because you are then seen as a discipline that knows something that can be shared that is useful with others. If you are seen as a trainer, as a knowledge expert, that's a lot different than being seen as a news release writer. Try it. I think you'll find excellent results. How about written goals? I don't mean for your department. Does your institution have a clear, concise statement of its goals for this year, for the next 5 years? If it doesn't, it should. After all, how can the public or your other constituencies measure whether you've achieved anything unless you have some goals to point to show how far you've come? But that's not my reason for suggesting it. I suggest it because if you take the lead in helping the institution put together a goal statement, it will not only be a great public relations tool for you, but again, it will put you in a slightly different light at the top of the management. One other question. Do you have a professional development program for yourself and for your staff? Do you, every so many months, have a session of your group right on campus where you discuss a subject? I don't mean just running off to case conferences, although you certainly should have a certain number of those plugged in. But if I went to your office now, could you take out a folder that says professional development plan and go right through it? If you don't, it's one of the great ironies. You work for educational institutions that make their livings by selling this stuff, and yet I have never met a public relations department so far that had a professional development plan for itself. I suggest you get into it. By the way, if you're interested in what a professional public relations practitioner has to know, you may be interested in PRSA's recent compilation of a formal matrix for the three segments of what a practitioner has to master. This is a chart that elicits it all. It's divided into three segments. One is management skills, how to manage the public relations function, but also how to know organizational management. Secondly, communications, techniques, and skills. And thirdly, knowledge of the publics and audiences with which we must work. So help is available to set up a formal professional development plan. Two other points. If you don't have one, create an emergency plan. Don't be caught like they were at Three Mile Island and Mount St. Helens, where they had terrible repercussions from the public, from the media, from everybody else, because they simply didn't know what to do in case of an emergency. It's basic to any public relations operation, and when you put it together, you are again seen in a different light. You're seen as a management practitioner. Finally, please stop circulating all those damn clippings and start circulating trends. Send around to your executives trends that you can identify, even if you can only get them out of the media and speeches and other places like that. Try circulating those for a while instead of just asking to be judged on your clippings by circulating them. I think there is plenty of room at the top for us who are in public relations. And I think that we can get there by learning these skills. But I think in addition to that, we're going to have to do maybe one or two other things. One of them, of course, is to change our attitudes, which may be keeping us from this. The second one is to start feeling in our own hearts what the role of public relations really is in society. Because I have a hunch too many of us still believe that we work for the institutions that employ us. If you are a public relations professional, that is only partly true. Ultimately, you work for the public, for the constituencies that are out there. You must, because our society does function based on the court of public opinion. The evidence of that is everywhere since the days of the 1776 onward, and it's certainly true today, as the large institutions right here in Detroit are finding out. When the public does not give consent to an idea, awful things happen. I find that thinking of public relations in that kind of a social mandate makes a tremendous difference to how we do our work. And I urge you, think of yourselves as the attorneys, as the counselors in the court of public opinion on which our American pluralistic democratic system operates. That's a lot different. That's a lot greater social role than being an information officer for any institution. I urge you to join your colleagues all across the country who are beginning to think that way, because we need you, your institutions need you, and God knows, the public needs us all. Thank you.
Now about 4 or 5 minutes. Would you like to make any comments, offer your own opinions on the topic discussed here? Or would you like to ask any questions of the panel members? I know they'd be glad to answer them for you. We have a lot of old pros in this room. I see Sweet Johnson and Mike Radick was here and Roland King and a few others. Would any of you like to comment on room at the top of public relations, relationship with the president and so forth? Any questions? Yes.
Can I have a little bit more elaboration on the professional development program that you're suggesting?
Yes, I mean by that to imply that a department or even an individual that wishes to grow over time ought to have clearly plotted out those subjects that need to be covered. And as I say, there is now this volume available that lists a matrix to follow. It's available from my organization, the Public Relations Society of America. It's been about 16 years in the building. It's apparently fairly good because the U.S. Civil Service and the Canadian Civil Service are both incorporating it into their standards. And I simply don't see how you can function in this rapidly changing field without having a conscious program that every 90 days or every so often you're going to do one of the following things. Have a group session, go to a conference, take a course, read a book. Incidentally, one way that I've discovered that may be helpful to you, and we find a lot of fun, we form what we call literature groups. And we get 8 or 10 people together, and we divide up among the 8 or 10 one reading assignment a month. And then we meet for breakfast or cocktails or dinner or whatever is a time that suits. Some people meet on Saturday afternoons. And everybody shares what they have read. So that by going to that session, I only have to read one article or one book, but I come away with the knowledge that was incorporated in 8 or 10 or 12, however many people you want to get in your circle. It's really a tremendously beneficial way to try and cover the proliferating literature. That's one way that you might try.
If you establish the analogy of lawyers, doctors, think we ought to be moving toward to accreditation, possibly licensing of the profession?
Yes. PR, as a matter of fact, I come here to you having met in the past several days with the hospital public relations practitioners, the secondary school practitioners, and the Canadian Public Relations Society. And at these meetings, which, by the way, Swede attended when we began, we are starting to talk about dealing with that very problem. I think the answer is going to be that I haven't talked to Swede about that, that's why I'm here, is to set up some kind of an accreditation program that will be an umbrella, that won't be one organization's, but that will really be just out there, an accreditation program, and that practitioners will be able to become accredited by passing the written and oral exams and knowing the body of knowledge. And then every 5 years, there will probably be some kind of a reaccreditation through CEUs or formal coursework or speeches or writings or whatever. Whether or not we come to licensing is an open question. PRSA does have a task force that is looking at it again. There's a tremendous amount of interest in it. I personally don't fear it. It's just that if they're going to license us, I'd like them to do it with our exam, not something some bureaucrats wrote.
Sure. I'd like to ask you about moving ahead. I rather agree with the idea of the social mandate and that you really do have to serve the public as well as the institution. But I think that one of the reasons that public relations people have been held back in the advancement process is the fact of the mistrust of exactly who does the PR man work for. I think Father Curry's example of his PR man not being told who the president was because he couldn't keep a secret from the press is exactly, and also the jealousy over turf of, you know, the PR man becoming a spokesman for other constituencies, isn't that kind of that mistrust also as much a problem in the advancement?
Yes, but do you see what the organization is saying that views you that way? The organization is saying, we mistrust the public. I think that's probably the biggest single problem higher education have. We have been arrogant. We know more. Who are all those people out there? I can give you a file drawer full of speeches by college presidents that either directly or between the lines said exactly those words. The role of the public relations professional, I think, has to be made clear. And in PRSA, we had a two-year study of what people actually do to try and nail it down. And this is what we found. The public relations practitioner is the person in the middle. Our role is to help make decisions and policies and practices inside the institution and then to interpret those outwardly to our constituencies. And then to hear what the constituencies want and how they react and to interpret that back into the institution. And any of us that are involved in one-way communication are clearly in trouble, not just because our administrations may not like the idea, but because you can't build relationships without having someone that goes both inside and outside. Now, you're right. That's the difficulty of our calling. And that's why I think it's important to have the body of knowledge so clearly in mind that we can function more efficiently and that we can explain what we're doing. I just don't know any way around it.
Let us take one more question, then we could adjourn, and we'll keep the panel up front and answer your questions on a one-on-one basis for about a half hour, if you so desire. But one more question.
Jackson, you talk an awful lot about building up the image of the PR officer.
Yes.
You've given that as a rationale, in fact.
Yes.
You talk about having the PR officer actually lead the development of institutional goals, you'll improve the perception of that person at the college.
Yes.
I'm in development, I'm not in PR, but is the image of a PR officer that low? Is that the self-esteem that they have? That should be a rationale for something that you're doing? It seems to me the PR officer is to build up the colleges, not the individual. I see that as a conflict. I see it as perhaps leading to the kind of invasion of turf that can actually compromise the PR director's role at college. I mean, what's the planning officer going to say when a PR director starts developing goals at school? I think that might be going too far.
Anybody, whether it's the janitor or the president, will be affected, limited by the perception of them by others. This awful word, image. It seems to me that one of the things we have not done is to build up our own images. And what I'm suggesting to you is that until you build your own reputation, and you can't do it just by these kind of tricks, clearly there's got to be performance there. I'm just giving you some means of working into that. Until you've done that, I don't think you can function well in any position, including yours. You have to have a good self-image, which empowers you, and others have to grant a reputation to you for capability and achievement. And so there is absolutely no conflict between that and building up the reputation of the institution. In fact, you can't do the one without the other. When you go forth from the institution, unless you are somebody inside the place and outside the place, people aren't going to pay an awful lot of attention to you. I think Father Curry referred to that in the position. So if I misled you in giving you those tips, I didn't mean to. You got to start somewhere, and I was trying to give you 10 ways that you might get started.
Okay, thank you, Pat Jackson and Father Curry. The panel will stay up here if you have any other questions. Thank you for coming. Thanks, Pat. You're always superb. Appreciate it.
That was very good today.
We've got to get together.
Well, yeah.